Well, hello everyone. I'm joined once again by Todd Lewis, who's has a channel called Praise of Folly. And I would say you're one of the more popular guests that I've had on recently. Certainly less divisive than some of the other ones, but as all fans, they've got people who love them and people who don't. But welcome back, Todd. How are you doing?
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad to be here. I mean, after all, I'm just trying to be sensible center like you. That's why.
I do have a bit of noise interference today because the lodge is being spruced up. It's got a hot jet smashing it. If you can imagine, all the walls are being washed right now. So I'm going to try to keep myself fairly muted for this, but if there is some interference, that is why. Just before we get going, I'll remind people, promo code SHORJAN gets you 25% off all courses for all of January. I'll spare you the video today, Todd. I think you've seen it more than any other person. So let's, but remember, it's promo code SHORJAN. If you send the receipt to the publishers of Foundations of Shakespeare, if you do the Shakespeare course, that will give you 50% off the book as well. All right, you want to talk, Todd, about men without mastery. Why don't you explain what that means?
Right. So C.S. Lewis in The Abolition of Man speaks of men without chests. And what he means by that is men that lack the sort of moral conviction and courage to stand up and do what is right. And then mastery is a concept that many on the dissident right are exposed to through Jack Donovan and his work on The Way of Men, which is, again, a well-researched book on sort of manhood and masculinity as an active process, active in physical space. But as you've known before, AA, the idea that men can be defined in a certain way only kind of pigeonholes them. So, for example, if you read The Way of Men, you're not going to read about, you know, intellectuals like, say, a Newton or an Einstein. They're just not in there. Now, that's part of it. So what my big picture here is that it's incomplete, but how so? In a fundamental way. So Jack Donovan makes a distinction between being good at being a man and being a good man. So good here is being used equivocally. The first case, it's utility use. Well, I can do masculine things, which are physically active things. He talks about, you know, hunting and soldiering and protecting police officers and things like that. Now, he doesn't talk about intellectual pursuits, which is one complaint I have. But the other one is being a good man, being ethical and moral. And he says that those are two separate things. And I'm going to argue one that's not really true. So if you look at the classical virtues, courage is sort of the one that Jack Donovan's talking about, sort of masculine active virtues. Then there's prudence, justice, and temperance. And let's make it really practical. If you're a vicious man and say you get drunk on watch and then your camp gets attacked and sacked by the enemy, you are not, in fact, good at being a man. Your moral failure to stay awake at night on the watch because you were drunk was itself making you bad at being a man. So you can't so neatly and tidily take these apart, right? And so you end up having this sort of like hollow shell men, where you have men that are acting in a certain way that they think they need to be masculine, but they don't have a chest. They don't have mastery specifically over themselves. Because if you read The Way of Men, one of the things that Jack Donovan doesn't talk about is that the men have mastery over things, over animals, over other men, over tools, over nature, but they don't have mastery over themselves. And this creates a problem. Because if you don't have mastery over yourself, you'll lose. Sun Tzu says, if you know yourself and you know your enemy, you cannot fear the result of 100 battles. If you know yourself and do not know the enemy, then you'll lose all the time. And then it's 50-50 if you know yourself or you don't know the enemy or vice versa. And so a good example of this would be in a duel. Miyamoto Musashi, who had mastery of himself, allowed him to have mastery over others. One of the things he would do is he would disrupt the OODA loop of his duelists. One day he showed up late with a wooden sword, and the guy who was fighting thought this was just a complete outrageous insult and just kind of lost it. And then Musashi takes him out in one blow because the guy, he was a swordsman. He had mastery, no doubt, but he didn't have mastery over himself. And because he didn't have mastery over himself, he lost the duel to Musashi. And so what I'm arguing is that mastery over other things is itself a proxy for mastery over oneself. As Musashi says, if you know one path, you know 10,000 paths. The problem is, if you don't master yourself, you're just setting yourself up to fail, and then also those who rely on you to fail.
Yeah, I mean, one of the, I guess the sorts of people I've read are a little bit different. You keep on talking about Jack Donovan, right? Obviously, the esoteric writer that I've read most and I'm most acquainted with is Evola, who talks a lot about mastery. He talks a lot about, you know, the ideal masculine and the ideal feminine and so on. And Evola always talks about two paths, you know, the path of action and the path of contemplation. And where I've seen this kind of creep into the popular culture, if you want, I don't know if you've come across a writer called David Dada. He wrote a book called The Way of the Superior Man, which had some element of, I mean, I thought it was a straight kind of proxy for the sort of stuff that Evola says. Although Dada, I mean, he wrote his book in the 90s, has got a few more liberal priors here and there. But essentially it's this, is that you have to have mastery over yourself rather than anything else. And in fact, a lot of the advice then when it comes to, you know, how to deal with women and so on is counterintuitive, because they're all of the focus is on changing yourself and none on like modifying the behavior of anybody else. Right. So you get into, I don't know, like concepts of, I guess, total ownership and things like this. And you kind of lean away from, I don't know, like not only blaming the woman for everything that's gone wrong, but also blaming women per se, i.e. out there in the culture or feminism or something else, because basically that is a form of excuse making in this kind of Evolian or David Dada type frame. So that's kind of how I have come to think about it. Well, this is the sorts of way of thinking of these sorts of things that I've seen. Jack Donovan, from my understanding, what, like, is he more like towards an Andrew Tate? Like, how would you explain? Yeah.
So Jack Donovan here, his advice and the way he defines what a man is, right? It's different than our previous episode where we critiqued the lot of the manosphere. He does not define a man's value by his success with women. And after all, Gay Donovan is he's a gay man, so of course he doesn't define a male success that way. So he's not defining male success or optimal masculinity in a way that is sexual, even though it might include it in a holistic fashion. It's more like, what can the man do, right? It's a very like outward, active, doing things, and also getting along with other men, you know, building the man tribe and whatnot. And so that creates a certain perspective, arguably a much more healthy perspective than the PUA types. But I still think it's incomplete in the sense that it's almost like you have, you know, a mecha, your body's the mecha, and then the conscious self is the pilot, and there just isn't a pilot because you didn't master yourself. You didn't go through the training to pilot the mecha. It's like, okay, you can do all this stuff and that's great, but like, you know, you're basically running on steam, right? This isn't really something intentional. And oftentimes external mastery is a proxy for the failure to master yourself. Now, why does this matter? It's not just theoretical. It's like, if you can't do this, you can't win. And one of the things that the right, online right, has been trying to offer young men and men in general is, what is a plan to succeed? What is a plan to succeed not only in your own life, but, you know, in the nation for right-wing people as a whole? Well, you know, again, a lot of the failures we've observed are the result of lack of self-mastery, which, again, is the beginning of strategy. It's not just disconnected from, you know, defining what a man is, and self-mastery is not disconnected from strategy and competition either.
Things are getting very noisy here, Todd, but give me some examples of how this might manifest in a political way. Like, how might lack of self-mastery translate into strategic or tactical losses for people who haven't done this?
Yeah, so for example, if we have a prince, let's go back to like a medieval or ancient setting, who has a vendetta or a vindictive, well, let's make it modern. And his Wiedemeyer speaks. Wiedemeyer says that he was the American officer who planned the logistical campaign for World War II. He made all the calculations before the war. And then he later served in China as a replacement for the previous commander who didn't get along with Chiang Kai-shek very well. So this guy got along better. And he said that, you know, this is quite an admission. He says that the hatred that Roosevelt had of the Germans, and of Hitler in particular, was what motivated America to enter into the war. Now we see this, and he says this is a bad thing. He says, like, look, it ended up, the communists ended up getting most of the gains out of this war. So we have a moral failing, hatred of the German people, motivating almost entirely state policy. And, you know, this audience, I don't think needs to be retold how American entry into World War One or two, rather, made all sorts of problems. The same with World War One, also, too. The sort of like Wilson himself had a sort of irrational hatred of the German people. And so we have policies being made by people who are being actually driven by underlying psychological issues that they're failing to admit, or and these are themselves a reflection of a soul or a self that has not been mastered. And so we could take this to an individual level, like I said, like a hothead duelist duelist who is confronted and then disrupted, and he acts hastily and he's defeated, right? So the idea is, if you have, you know, the classic vices like, you know, greed or lust or hatred or pride or whatever, they end up becoming these sort of like drivers for people with power if they haven't done that kind of work to sort of go through their soul and go through their mind and acquire mastery over it. And so they might not even be aware that that's the case, right? So I'm not necessarily saying that they're hiding this on purpose. They might or they might not be. The regardless is, though, that ends up being the motive power behind the policies that they're making. And again, that's bad. What you want are policies that are informed by reason, that are informed by evidence. And the best way to guarantee that such policies are made is if you have people that have mastery over themselves. This also bleeds into civil life, politics. One of the things that the Founding Fathers mentioned was you can't have a Republican system without a moral people. John Adams said that. You also can't have a Republican form of government without people who are able to participate in that process. Self-government, the political concept, is an outgrowth of the philosophical moral concept of self-government, which is another way of saying self-control or self-mastery. So self-mastery, on a theoretical level, is you being able to control yourself absent, you know, your impulses, absent any external force. But practically, it's the foundation for political life and strategy. And the fact that we keep running up against strategic deficits and the civil system of government keeps falling apart is in no small part due to this.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking, Todd, was, you know, one of my absolute bugbears, sloth. People having low impulse control. People allowing themselves to be ruled by anger and emotion. People kind of, in a way, showing their worst self. One of the things I wonder about is stuff like Trump and MAGA and slop and so on a manifestation, okay, of just what people want, i.e., is Trump an expression of something deep within the American soul, or is MAGA and friends a function of Trump? How would you answer that?
Right. So, well, the first thing I would argue is that state is that since at least, let's say, 1945, if not earlier, the U.S. education system, and sadly, churches as well, because it's sort of like a two-fold approach here, people are not taught how to form these completed selves, these conscious self, the soul that is controlled by you, right, not by someone else. Partly it's because they forgot. Partly it's because education was restructured so that that was no longer considered important. Moral education has often been considered, you know, the butt of jokes for decades now. And so now you have a point where people don't even realize that that's a problem they need to address. But then again, what's the real reason why a thing is what a thing does? Well, it makes money. Because if you have people that have impulses and emotions that can be manipulated, they can then be manipulated to buy products. So let's say you had a rational population that was in control of their own spirit. They see an ad. Well, they're going to immediately analyze the messaging of the ad. And they're going to do what we do. And they're going to be like, well, hey, look, you know, this ad, you know, it says if I buy this, I'm going to get that. But that doesn't make sense. There's no connection there. And then they're just going to not, it won't be effective. Ads are only effective if they can manipulate the id by having people not think about it, right? If they don't admit that they have this problem or they have this unconscious side, then it can be manipulated without them being aware of it. A good example of exploring this concept is the science fiction film Forbidden Planet, where it's the backstory behind it is that an advanced alien race developed technology that would allow them to think physical things into existence. And they thought they were all so rational that they didn't have an id with all these, you know, suppressed antisocial behaviors, and it destroyed their civilization. And it's kind of a detective story, like, well, how did this happen? How did these aliens so advanced, so much more advanced than humans, wipe themselves out? And so what I would view the Trump system as, this whole MAGA slop engine, is it's one, it's an engine for profit because you can just keep selling slop to these people. You create the conditions where they are maximally receptive to the slop because they don't have any of the tools necessary in their own lives to be able to look at what they're consuming and say, hey, you know, I shouldn't be doing this. It's in this case, it's a lot like a junkie. He just keeps eating junk food or he keeps getting shots of whatever his favorite drug is. He just can't help it anymore. He can't be, in part because he didn't construct his spirit or soul such that he could resist it. This is all on purpose, right? These are all parts of a complex system of education that used to be the bedrock of Western education. That it's not now is in large part due to corporate purposes.
How would you respond to those people, Todd, who say that the likes of me and you simply refer to anything that we don't like as slop? And in fact, this is just like another form of name calling, something like this. Whereas in fact, you know, these people are kind of justified in going along with whatever the current thing is. What is the kind of counter to these sorts of comments that I see once in a while?
Well, I think what I would say is we can define slop and quality of content in a sort of objective way. And that means it's independent of my personal preferences or your personal preferences. So content that is good, let's first define what's good. It accurately identifies and describes the issue. It doesn't just point to the problem. It accurately describes it so that you can formulate, if not in the content itself, formulate a correct line of approach. Slop, on the other hand, points to the problem, doesn't tell you how to fix it. In fact, it mischaracterizes the problem so that you're caught in this system of rage that's manipulated for profit. Whereas the other system that we described would just help you get over it and solve it. But of course, that's not, the money's not in there, right? That's one thing. The other thing is slop content is not very complex. It's very simple, very low grade. Whereas quality content tends to be structured, ordered, complex, right? It's a structured, ordered system rather than just, you know, something that's like goop on the floor, right? So that's what I would say. Slop points to the problem, but it mischaracterizes it for the purposes of controlling you, either to manipulate it for clout or money. And it's not sophisticated. It's very low grade and simple. It's not a reflection of a rich, complex thought process.
See, I would agree with what you said, but I would also add that, I mean, I come back to Daniel Kahneman's system one and two thinking, or fast and slow. Slop also goes with grug brain, like it's low impulse, it's easy, right? You want it, you kind of want to do it, you're going along with the emotions. Whereas, you know, something that I would describe as not slop takes effort. It's difficult. In a sense, it takes some discipline. Which brings us back to what is mastery? And how do you achieve, I mean, for people who lack self-control and discipline, how do you start achieving these things? What is the path to mastery, Todd?
Right. So I think you brought up a very good point there. A slop is passive, whereas quality content is active. You can just sort of like flip on the screen and let the slop run for hour after hour, and you're passively consuming it. Whereas if you were to listen to a podcast where somebody's breaking down the Book of Five Rings by Miyamoto Musashi, you're going to have to listen and pay careful attention, because that's not going to be easy to just consume. So now then the question is, well, if you don't have mastery, how do you get it? One, that's a long, complex process. Every bit as rigorous as, say, someone training to be special forces or a police officer or anything like that. The problem is nobody's really teaching this anymore. It used to be something that was a part of education organically. And, whereas you can get specified training in a profession, which is extremely rigorous physically and even mentally, but at least the way they're done now, they don't treat it as something like that, because these are what all these other high energy professions are, is they're specific to that single profession. There isn't like an intentional bleed over. Whereas if you acquire self-mastery, it bleeds over into everything else. It is a universally applicable thing, because you can't think of a situation in life in which that wouldn't actually be helpful. So the first thing that you would need to do is admit that that's a problem you need to solve, right? Alcoholics Anonymous says you can't solve the problem if you don't admit that it's there. The second thing is you'd have to find a list of authors. Since we don't really have teachers anymore right now, you'd have to read authors who are dead who wrote about this and the need to do this. And there's different traditions, right? I mean, you have like Christian devotional writers for the Christian tradition. You also have the writings of the Greek philosophers and classical pagans, if you're, say, not a Christian, or a Christian, because it's still effective for them as well. And it really, there's no shortcuts. That's another thing. Slop promises shortcuts. And the thing that I would tell somebody is, if they wanted to start today, they just have to do a simple task. Look at every decision you do in your life for this day and ask yourself, can you give a reason why you did it? And if you can't give a reason for why you did it, then that means you're acting out of some sort of instinctual impulse rather than reason. Now, that doesn't tell you how to address that problem, but it's how you identify it. And that's the first thing I tell the person. The second thing I tell the person is, once you have a list of things that you've done in the day that you don't know why you do, try to come up with a reason why you might do it. And if you can't, stop. Just don't do it anymore. You should, if you can't give a reason for why you're doing it, you shouldn't be doing it. And that's sort of like pruning the tree branches, if you will, using an analogy. You got to keep doing that until you get to the core of who you are, which is, you know, that part of you that's motivated by reason.
Now, I can imagine, I'm not saying Jack Donovan would say this, but I can imagine somebody from his kind of line might say, well, look at this, Todd, right? Look at me, Jack Donovan. I'm ripped. I go to the gym every day. I have a $1 million body. That shows I have discipline. That shows I have focus. Why should anybody listen to you, Todd? You're a nerd. You've got, you need to shave your beard. You look like a gnome and all this sort of stuff. Why should anybody listen to you, nerd, over me, ripped Jack Donovan? How would you respond to this sort of comeback? Because I can imagine there'll be somebody in the chat saying this, right?
That's one word easy. That I can answer in one word, the sandbox. All these ripped jack football player guys go over to the sandbox and lose legs and arms and, worst case, lives because they weren't looking at the situation correctly. Yeah, in a one-on-one fight, you know, if a linebacker goes up against a Haji, the linebacker is going to win. But who won in Afghanistan? Well, it was the Taliban, because there was a whole different game being played here. And so, yeah, you have guys, it's a level of scope, right? You could look at two guys in a duel, very narrow scope, very small, and that feeds into the Chud brain. I mean, it's exciting. I mean, action adventure films are fun, but that's not real life. Real life is a complex web of interconnecting parts working, and even the strongest man, the most capable man in that sense, could just be wrecked. I mean, let's look at Hercules, right? Hercules ends up putting on a coat soaked in Hydra venom because he just wasn't paying attention. I mean, he's still Hercules, but it didn't end up well for him.
All right, so interesting. But what I guess what I'm saying is that Jack Donovan, in a sense, could say, well, I can show one thing I've achieved mastery over, the discipline to go to the gym every day and have a ripped body. What can you demonstrate you have got mastery over, and therefore, why should people listen to you? I guess that's the real, like, that there's the Grug response, but there's also possibly a logic behind it. He can show, through his dedication to go to the gym, he's got a body to show for it. What could you say, well, this is what I've done through my knowledge of self-mastery, X, Y, Z?
Well, right, and this is where, living in a modern materialist age, it gets hard to talk about things. One can master intellectual concepts, professions, and ideas. That's not readily apparent to somebody who hasn't done it with you. So let's say you're a bodybuilder, okay? Now, anybody who's not a bodybuilder, and even anybody with a very, you know, average IQ, understands just by looking at you what you've done. But if you've, say, you know, mastered quantum mechanics, a lot of people aren't going to understand what that means. You could tell them, but they lack the understanding to know what you know. And you can't just show them some physical token of what you've done that indicates that you've done it. So the problem is you can't actually prove to these people that you've done it, because they need to see some physical token, which is itself the problem of slop mindset, because you need to see some physical token of what this thing is. And let's go back to Afghanistan, right? The physical tokens were all in America's favor, bigger guns, bigger everything, but America lost because there was something that they weren't taking into account that was low observable and difficult to find. And I think that's what my answer would be.
Interesting, Todd. So you talked about finding the right authors, finding the right books. Who would you point people towards if they're looking for greater mastery over themselves?
I would say two. C.S. Lewis and Musashi. These are two easy to get into guys. The Book of Five Rings, that's a start. So read Musashi. He basically distills all of his hard work into simple statements. Not simple in the sense that they're written for stupid people, but simple in that they've been compressed into the densest information set. And then you've got C.S. Lewis with The Abolition of Man and his other works. They're very approachable. They talk about the problems. They tell you how to start doing it. Anything beyond those two would be more for experts and not novices.
Interesting. Very interesting, Todd. Well, I said we'd aim for these half-hour conversations. So let's end it there. We're going to carry on some of these themes in some subsequent videos where we're going to talk about trance. We're going to talk about, because all of these things, Todd, that we talk about are in some ways connected, aren't they? They're all kind of in and around one essential problem that's facing us in the, I guess, broadly speaking, in the West today, where there is some sort of crisis. But where can people find you?
Well, they can find me at POF Podcast on X, and they can find me on YouTube at the Praise of Folly Podcast.
And I'll just mention again, promo code SHORJAN, right up until the end of 31st of January. We'll get you 25% off all courses there. If you buy Foundations of Shakespeare and send the receipt to the publisher, that will give you 50% off that book, Foundations of Shakespeare. That's Academic Imprint, the press. And most importantly of all, friends, get out.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.